So, inside those gray humming metal boxes you always see outside factories or, large commercial buildings, there is literally enough electrical force in there to vaporize a human being in a fraction of a second.
Yeah, it's incredibly dangerous. It really is a remarkable engineering challenge when you think about it.
Right. And to most of us, an industrial switchboard just looks like this locked cabinet covered in, confusing dials and blinking lights and glass screens. But today, for this deep dive, we are going to decode this vital dashboard of the modern world.
Exactly. What's fascinating here is that without these instruments, we are flying completely blind in a world powered by massive electrical forces.
Okay, let's unpack this because we're looking at the literal nervous system of our industrial grid today. We're looking at these tiny, delicate instruments that keep all that invisible chaos from blowing up.
Because you can't see electricity. You can't hear it. Well, at least not until things going catastrophically wrong. And you obviously cannot touch it.
Yeah, definitely don't touch it.
Right. So the only way to manage industrial scale power is to translate it into a physical language that we can safely read, from a few feet away.
From a safe distance. So before we get into the complex stuff, we have to start with the fundamental building blocks, like how much power is actually flowing and how hard it's pushing.
Right. The baseline measurements.
I mean, anyone who has tinkered with electronics knows you measure current with an ammeter and you measure voltage with a voltmeter. But scaling that up to an industrial level, I imagine that changes the rules of the game completely.
It absolutely does,
Yeah.
because the physical installation have to reflect the actual physics of what you're measuring.
Okay, what do you mean by that?
Well, take the ammeter. Since the ammeter is measuring the actual flow of electrons, it has to be connected in series with the load. So the electricity literally has to flow through the measuring device.
Right, it's like a water meter on a pipe. All the water has to go through it so you know the volume.
Exactly. And then a voltmeter is measuring the pressure difference between two points, so that is connected in parallel. But in a factory setting, you aren't just measuring a simple positive and negative wire, you are dealing with three-phase power.
Oh, right, which means instead of just one continuous wave of electricity, you have like three overlapping waves, and they're pulsing out of sync to provide this much smoother, continuous flow of massive power.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
It's kind of like a multi-cylinder engine, right? Where the firing sequence overlaps.
That is a really good way to picture it. And because of those multiple overlapping waves or phases, as we call them, switchboard voltmeters, use something called a volt selector switch.
So you don't need a million dials on the panel.
Exactly. Instead of plastering the panel door with six different dials just to monitor every possible combination, the operator can just turn a rotary switch.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah, they can measure the voltage between one specific phase and the neutral line, which is your standard operating voltage, or they can measure phase to phase, which tells them the pressure difference between two live waves.
Which definitely saves a lot of real estate on the panel door. But there's a detail in the source material about the dials themselves that really caught my attention.
Graduations?
Yeah, the physical scales on these meters. The text says there's a strict rule that an ammeter measuring a motor needs a graduation scale that goes up to 5 or 6, like 5 or 6 times the normal operating current.
Right, that is highly specific to motor applications.
But then a voltmeter never goes higher than a graduation of 1.2. Wait, why on earth does an ammeter need a scale of 5 or 6, but a voltmeter is fine at 1.2? Does the electricity really spike that violently just from turning a machine on?
It really does. Think about the physics of a massive industrial motor that is just sitting completely still. To get that dead weight moving, to overcome all that static mechanical inertia and establish an initial magnetic field, the motor demands an enormous surge of energy.
Oh, wow. So just to wake up, basically.
Right. For just a few seconds during startup, it will pull 5 to 6 times its rated operating current.
So if you have a motor that normally runs at, say, 100 amps, it might pull 600 amps just to get spinning.
Exactly. And inside an analog ammeter, that current is creating a magnetic field that physically pushes the needle across the dial.
Oh, I see where this is going.
Yeah, if you installed a standard meter scaled only for the normal 100 amps, that massive 600 amp startup spike would generate such a violent magnetic force that it would just slam the delicate needle past its maximum limit.
It would just break the pin.
It would bend the pin, or honestly, they could destroy the internal mechanism entirely. So the measuring tool has to be designed not just for normal operations, but to survive the chaotic physics of its own environment.
That is wild. And I guess the voltage, the pressure stays relatively stable during all of this.
Correct. the network voltage doesn't spike to 5 times its normal state when a motor turns on. I mean, if anything, it might dip slightly due to the massive current draw.
Oh, right, like when you turn on a vacuum and the lights dim for a second.
Exactly like that. That's why a voltmeter only needs a graduation of 1.2. It's just enough headroom to catch minor pressure fluctuations on the grid. In fact, switchboard voltmeters often have compressed scales at the lower end. They don't give you fine detail between 0 and 100 volts on a 400-volt system.
Why not? Wouldn't you want to know all the numbers?
Well, because if a 400-volt system drops to 100 volts, it really doesn't matter exactly what the number is. The system has already completely failed. You only need the high resolution right around that 400-volt mark.
Okay, yeah, that makes total sense. So we are measuring the raw flow with the ammeter and the raw pressure with the voltmeter.
Right.
But having those two numbers doesn't actually mean you have the full picture of what the factory is doing. Because the source material reveals that in these alternating current systems, not all the power flowing through the wire is actually doing useful work.
Which brings us to the efficiency enforcers.
Yes. We need to measure the actual efficiency of the power. We're moving from measuring raw ingredients to evaluating useful output.
Because a standard ammeter and voltmeter, they can really only tell you what is known as the apparent power.
Apparent power, meaning the total amount of energy occupying the lines.
Exactly. But to calculate the active power, which is the energy that is actually spinning the motors and doing real work, you need a watt meter.
And structurally, a watt meter is almost like a hybrid, right?
It is, yeah. It requires two separate circuits inside it. It has a current coil connected in series to feel the flow, and a voltage coil connected in parallel to feel the pressure.
So it takes those two physical forces and essentially multiplies them to show you the real work being done.
Exactly. But alongside that active power, there's also something called reactive power, which is measured by a varmeter.
And this is where things got a little abstract for me when I was reading, because reactive power is like energy that moves back and forth in the wires, but doesn't actually do any work.
Yeah, it's energy borrowed to create magnetic fields in things like motors and transformers, and then it just gets returned to the grid a fraction of a second later.
Okay. To help visualize this, I was thinking about a classic analogy. It's like ordering a pint of beer.
Oh, the beer analogy is perfect for this.
Right. So the liquid in the glass is the active power, measured by the watt meter. It's what you actually want. It does the work.
The useful part.
Exactly. And the foam on top is the reactive power, measured by the varmeter. It takes up space in the glass, but doesn't really do you any good.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, the power lines and transformers on the street have to be sized to handle the total glass, the liquid, and the foam combined.
The apparent power.
Right. So if a factory is drawing massive amounts of reactive power, they are taking up space on the utility company's grid without actually consuming billable energy.
They're just filling the grid with foam.
Yes. Which brings us to the ultimate financial watchdog of the switchboard, the cosine phi meter, or the power factor meter.
And this dial tells the operator the exact ratio of liquid to foam, the ratio of useful power versus wasted power.
And the real-world consequences here are entirely economic for the factory.
Fines, right.
Massive fines. Mm-hmm. If a factory's power factor drops below a certain allowable limit, meaning their machinery is highly inefficient and just constantly pulling that useless reactive power utility companies, will hit them with heavy financial penalties.
Wow. So the cosine phi meter is sitting there so operators can monitor that inefficiency in real time and, you know, correct it before the bill arrives.
Exactly. And depending on the type of facility, these meters use different scales. Like you might see a 90-degree one-sided scale if the factory only uses inductive loads.
Inductive loads being your classic heavy machinery, like motors and coils that create those magnetic fields.
Right. Those inductive components cause the electrical current to drag slightly behind the voltage wave.
But if the facility also uses capacitive loads, which push the current ahead of the voltage, they use a 90-degree two-sided scale.
Exactly. The needle sits right at one in the center when everything is perfectly balanced, and it swings left or right if it gets too inductive or too capacitive.
And for massive installations, like actual power plants, the source notes, they use full 360-degree rotating scales to monitor the flow of power in any direction.
Because it is a constant, highly sensitive balancing act.
Okay, so we've secured our raw power, and we're monitoring the efficiency so we don't get fined. But because all this heavy industrial power relies on alternating current, or AC, timing is everything.
Timing is absolutely critical.
The flow is changing direction dozens of times every single second. If the timing is off, the whole system clashes.
Right. especially if you need to bring a second generator online to add more power to the network. Their sine waves have to be perfectly synchronized.
It's like double Dutch jump rope. You can't just jump in whenever.
That's a fun way to put it, but mechanically, it's more like taking two colossal spinning steel gears and slamming them together when the teeth aren't lined up.
Oh, geez.
Yeah. The mechanical and electrical forces will try to force them into synchronization instantly.
Which I assume does not go well.
No, it usually results in catastrophic damage to the generator shafts, massive explosions in the switchgear, or just taking down the entire local grid.
Which is why we rely on frequency meters, the mechanical heartbeat of the system.
Exactly. They are essential for paralleling two generators.
And the text mentions a few types. You have your standard needle types, digital displays, and synchroscopes, which actually contain two frequency meters to guide an operator. But the instrument that completely blew my mind here is the vibrating reed meter.
Oh, the mechanical tuning fork of the electrical world.
Yes. This is where it gets really interesting to me. Because in an era of digital everything, where a $5 microchip can count frequencies to 10 decimal places, we are using little metal blades physically vibrating in a coil to tell us the frequency of invisible electricity.
It is brilliant in its simplicity.
It's just wild. It is literally a row of steel reeds placed side by side inside an electromagnetic coil, and each individual blade is physically shaved and tuned to a slightly different natural vibration frequency.
Like 49.8 hertz, 49.9 hertz, 50 hertz.
Right, and when the AC current passes through that coil, it creates an oscillating magnetic field, and only the specific metal blade whose natural physical frequency matches that current will physically resonate and start shaking.
You literally just look at the dial, and whichever little metal tab is vibrating tells you exactly how fast the power grid is pulsing.
But wait, why on earth is an analog physical vibrating instrument still highly valued in modern industrial switchboards?
Because an industrial switchboard is a notoriously hostile environment.
Hostile how?
Well, you are dealing with massive physical vibrations from heavy machinery bolted to the floor. You have extreme temperature fluctuations, and most importantly, you have immense electromagnetic interference.
Oh, right, because of all the massive power flowing everywhere.
Exactly. A delicate digital sensor can easily be scrambled or destroyed by a sudden voltage spike or a magnetic surge from a nearby fault. But the vibrating reed meter is virtually immune to that kind of electrical noise.
Because it's just physical metal.
Right. It has incredibly high shock resistance. It relies on pure, undeniable mechanical resonance. As long as the physical metal exists, it will not lie to you.
It's totally analog survivalism. I absolutely love that.
It really is.
Okay, so we have all these delicate metal blades and precision coils, but the main bus bars of a factory are carrying massive, lethal amounts of energy. Thousands of amps, tens of thousands of volts.
Which presents a major physical problem.
Yeah, how do these sensitive instruments not instantly melt? Like, if you take a switchboard voltmeter and wire it directly to a 20,000 volt main power line, it wouldn't just break, it would vaporize, wouldn't it?
It vaporizes completely. And the ensuing arc flash takes out the panel and the operator standing in front of it.
Okay, so you simply cannot bring primary network voltage or current to a steel door where a human being operates.
No, absolutely not. You have to safely scale the unmeasurable down to a fraction of its size.
Which brings us to the domain of measuring transformers, specifically current transformers, or CTs, and voltage transformers, known as PTs.
These are what make the whole system possible. A voltage transformer will take a massive, lethal 20 kilovolt main line and electromagnetically step it down to a completely safe 100 volts.
And a current transformer might step like 1,000 amps down to a standard 5 amps.
Exactly. The measuring instruments on the door are uniformly built to expect these specific, standardized, smaller inputs, usually 100 volts and 5 amps.
But the numbers printed on the dial face still show the real primary numbers, right? So the needle points to 20,000 volts, allowing the operator to know what's happening in the main line.
Right, the display is scaled up, but the physical electrical force actually pushing that needle is only 100 volts.
But the text mentions that sometimes even safely stepping it down isn't quite enough, because the control room where the operator sits might be like half a kilometer away from the actual transformers.
And that introduces the reality of wire resistance.
Because if you try to send a 100 volt or 5 amp signal down 500 meters of copper wire, you lose some of it.
Exactly. The physical resistance of that long wire will cause a voltage drop. So by the time the signal reaches a voltmeter 500 meters away, it might only read 85 volts instead of 100.
Meaning your measurements become wildly inaccurate.
Right. And to solve that, engineers use transducers.
Okay, so a transducer sits near the transformer, takes that 5 amp or 100 volt measurement, and converts it into a tiny DC current signal.
Specifically, a standard range of 4 to 20 milliamps.
And why current? Because unlike voltage, which drops over distance, current stays consistent throughout a continuous loop of wire.
Exactly. That tiny milliamp signal can easily travel 500 meters without losing its integrity.
But the text highlights something really interesting about that 4 to 20 milliamp standard. Why does it start at 4 milliamps rather than zero?
Oh, this is an incredibly elegant piece of engineering. It's what we call a live zero.
A live zero. Because if 0 milliamps meant zero input and 20 milliamps meant maximum input, you'd have a fatal flaw.
Right. Imagine if a wire gets cut by a forklift or the power supply fails entirely. The signal drops to zero.
And if your scale started zero, the operator in the control room would look at the dial, see zero, and just assume the machine was turned off.
Exactly. They wouldn't know the monitoring system was actually broken. By setting the baseline at 4 milliamps, a reading of 4 tells the operator the machine is off, but the monitoring system is healthy.
And if the reading ever drops to 0 milliamps, it instantly triggers an alarm that the communication line itself is severed.
It's a brilliant built-in failsafe.
It really is. But speaking of failsafes, we need to talk about what is arguably the most critical and honestly counterintuitive safety warning regarding these transformers.
You're talking about the current transformers.
Yes. The text is incredibly explicit about this. When you are wiring a current transformer, the primary winding operates in series, and the secondary winding operates in a near short circuit condition.
Right.
But then there's this absolute non-negotiable directive. It says never use a fuse in the secondary supply path of a CT.
It is the absolute golden rule of current transformers.
Well, wait, hang on. Aren't fuses supposed to be for safety? Like, a fuse is literally a piece of wire designed to melt and break the circuit if things get too hot to protect the equipment?
Yes, normally.
So why is adding a safety device suddenly a massive hazard here? Why would a fuse turn this specific circuit into a bomb?
To understand this, you really have to look at the physics of magnetic flux inside the transformer's iron core.
Okay, break that down for us.
Well, the primary winding is carrying the massive industrial current, say, 1,000 amps. That massive current is generating a correspondingly massive magnetic field, or flux, inside the core.
Right.
Now, because the secondary winding is connected in a near short circuit, it is freely flowing its proportional 5 amps. And that 5 amp secondary current creates its own magnetic field,
which pushes back against the primary field.
Precisely. The secondary field suppresses the primary field. The two magnetic fields are constantly fighting, keeping each other balanced, and keeping the core from absorbing all that raw energy.
Okay, I'm tracking.
But if you install a fuse in that secondary circuit, and some minor surge causes that fuse to blow, you instantly open the circuit.
The wire breaks.
The secondary current drops to absolute zero. Instantly.
Meaning its opposing magnetic field just vanishes.
Exactly.
Like,
with nothing pushing back, the massive magnetic flux from the primary winding completely floods the iron core, saturating it.
Oh.
And the physics of magnetic induction dictate that this rapid, unchecked change will induce an uncontrollable, violently high voltage across those now open secondary terminals.
Even though it's only supposed to be a 5 amp low voltage line.
We are talking thousands, potentially tens of thousands of volts, spiking in a fraction of a second.
Wow.
It will immediately burn through the insulation, completely destroy the transformer, trigger a massive arc flash, and it could severely injure or kill any operator nearby.
That is terrifying.
It is. A fuse is a vital safety device in a voltage circuit.
Mm-hmm.
But in the highly specific magnetic balancing act of a current transformer, breaking the circuit removes the very thing keeping the energy contained.
It is a perfect example of how safety rules change entirely depending on the specific physics of a component. Context is just everything here.
It really is.
It's incredible to think about the tightrope these engineers are walking every day. You have all these distinct instruments, the voltmeters, ammeters, wattmeters, vibrating frequency reads.
All working together.
Yeah, like an orchestra on a panel door, mechanically translating the chaos into a readable format. But it makes me wonder, where does this technology go from here?
Well, the source material points toward digital consolidation.
Right, because it seems like having 30 different mechanical dials is eventually going to give way to modern tech. And that brings us to the ultimate synthesis mentioned in the text, the power meter.
Yes. The modern switchboard has already undergone a massive transformation because of the power meter.
It essentially takes every single instrument we've discussed today and compresses them into a single electronic unit, right?
Exactly. It's a microchip connected to a digital screen right on the panel door. It instantly calculates active power, reactive power, power factor, current, voltage, frequency, all of it
It
simultaneously.
is undeniably more efficient.
It's the ultimate evolution. Instead of an operator scanning a huge wall of separate analog dials, trying to mentally correlate a voltage dip on the left with a reactive power surge on the right, a single device processes the entire ecosystem in real time.
And it can log the data, send it to the cloud, trigger automated responses.
It's incredibly
It's
powerful.
a marvel of modern engineering. And, for you listening, the next time you walk past an industrial site, a power plant, or even just a large commercial building, you will know exactly what is happening inside those humming gray boxes.
You aren't just looking at a metal box anymore.
No, it's a symphony of perfectly calibrated physics. Magnetic fields pushing needles, metal blades vibrating in resonance, and carefully balanced transformers safely scaling down lethal energy so we can keep the lights on and the machines running.
It is a beautifully complex system. But, that shift toward the digital power meter does leave us with an interesting dilemma to consider.
Oh, what's that?
Well, we've explored how a traditional switchboard relies on an orchestra of distinct, decentralized instruments, a separate ammeter, a vibrating read frequency meter, a dedicated voltmeter. A vibrating read meter survives because it's just physical metal. A mechanical ammeter works because it's driven directly by the magnetic source of the current itself. It is, as you said earlier, analog survivalism.
Yeah, it's virtually indestructible.
Exactly. But today, the modern power meter replaces all of that with a single digital screen and a microchip. It's undeniably far more efficient. But it begs the question, when we replace 30 mechanical dials with one single microchip, do we lose the inherent safety of decentralized physical monitoring?
Oh, wow.
If that one single screen goes black, our entire window into the invisible, lethal world of power just completely disappears.
And we will leave you to think on that. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive, and we'll catch you next time.